excerpt was recorded in. We're on a train at this point, as we were last week, heading out of the country, heading towards Ukraine. And I don't know, Kyle, do you think we overdid it as far as all the complaining?
Well, I think we tried to sum up as much of the positive stuff as we could, but there was stuff that was a bit, nagging that we wanted to point out.
Yeah, we tried to sum up the positive, and then we realized we still had a lot of time to kill, so we figured we'd delve into the negative a little bit, and we found we just couldn't stop.
Right. Well, I mean, you try to think, like, how can you bridge these, you know, communities? How can you bring people together? Like, the small world, here we are traveling, like, what ways are they reaching out to us? And, like, really, it was just to push us out of the way or slam a door in us or cut in front of us somewhere. There wasn't a lot of, like, you know, diplomacy like that. So we felt we had to at least point out some things. It was just a fair amount of discomfort. Overall.
Yeah, there was a lot of pushing.
The travel destination. I don't know if people should pack up right now and, you know, bring the kids and celebrate the new year and everything. I don't know if Belarus is quite there.
Well, I mean, it is what you make it. It is what you make. But there was a lot of pushing. There was a lot of shoving, yelling, screaming, unpleasantness, people getting in front of you online and things like that. It's kind of like a part of the culture over there, but it is what you make it. If you bring something positive into the mix, maybe it'll rub off, maybe it won't, but at least you'll have more fun. And I think we had as much fun as we could possibly have in that place. And I know there's a lot that we didn't see. I know that we're judging it based on just a few days. And also, I was sick at the time, so I was in a really foul mood. But very different from the other places that we had been to. We had just come from Poland, and at this point on the train, we're heading towards Ukraine, and we're just filled with hope about what Ukraine will be all about, and we'll find out more about that next week. It was harsh. It was a really harsh place, and as I've said in the past, it's like going back to the Soviet Union. They never actually seem to have left the Soviet Union.
Yeah, it's like gruff. But we, you know, it's not to say we didn't enjoy the quirks, but the quirks tended to be a bit this uncomfortable side. And so I really thoroughly enjoyed all these places. As you said, Ukraine was really a thrill. And I'm still pinching myself. I can't believe we were able to pull it off and that I actually went to these places. It's really cool, especially to have captured this storytelling that we did on the way.
And to our listeners, it's something that is not so insurmountable a challenge that you can't pull it off yourself. You can't figure out a way to get over there and wander around and just kind of take it all in and learn. Yeah, going to Belarus was an extra hassle because you have to get a visa, you have to get an invitation. But all of that is handled online. You can pretty much figure it out. It's just a little bit of bureaucracy, which really gets you in the mood. Can you believe somebody would text me when they know I'm on the radio? How rude is that? I mean, really. This person's getting a sarcastic reply. It gets you in the mood for all of the bureaucracy that's going to be coming your way once you actually get into the country, starting with when they shout at you for not having the little piece of paper all filled out on the train. That was a rude awakening. But let's focus on what we're about to hear now, because it's a continuation of last week. I think last week we told the pizza story, the horrors of trying to order a pizza inside a cafeteria, and how I think we almost had the police called on us. But now we've sort of moved beyond that. We're talking about the metro and the fun of riding on the metro and things like that. There is a point. I don't know if you remember this, Kyle, but there's a point on the train where this deaf guy got on. Do you remember this? We're in our little cabin, and this deaf guy suddenly comes in and hands us some little trinket or something. Remember that?
Yeah.
And you know sign language, so you were signing with him, but then you realized that you were spelling out words, and if you're spelling out words in a different language, it's not going to mean anything, even if you can sign.
Right. But
it was an interesting... In the middle of this, you'll suddenly hear us go quiet and sound all puzzled and perplexed. It's because this deaf guy came in, gave us something, and then came back later hoping that we'd give him some money in exchange. I don't think we did. I don't really know why we didn't, though, because in Belarus, there is no change. There are only bills, and the bills are pretty much worthless We saw homeless people walking around the street with huge wads of bills, but they didn't mean anything. And in fact, there's an amusing story about one particular derelict guy that we were watching, which we're going to tell at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. As with a lot of our travels, we learned a lot about ourselves in some of these interesting situations. So can kind of maybe we'll be able to pick that up in the tenor of our discussion.
I think so. And we also had some interesting encounters when we were walking around the streets of Minsk in Belarus. In fact, I should caution you, please don't say his name. There was a guy that we were talking to who was taking pictures, and we bleeped out his name in the segment ahead because, what he was doing might be considered disrespectful to the regime in Belarus. And Belarus is an accredited dictatorship, the last one in Europe, supposedly. So we don't want word to get back and have him tortured or whatnot.
Accredited?
I'm sorry, it's accredited. Yes, it's listed
like beauty in beauty schools or something.
No, there's no the Academy of Dictatorships. If you go to their website, you will see that Belarus is near the top, not at the top, but very near the top, and they won the cup, I think, 3 years ago. So yeah, they're definitely an accredited. Accredited dictatorship, might be for some time to come. Although we did see signs that things might be changing.
Well, especially with the situation in Asia right now and whatnot. So.
Uh-huh. Well, situation all throughout the world, the Arab Spring, and this was prior to Occupy Wall Street, but there was definitely a mood in the global community of change in 2011. Now, this was recorded, what month was this? Was this August? I think it was August. All right, pretty sure it was August. It was after the chaos camp, I know that much. Again, we're on the train now. We're heading towards the Ukraine. We're not yet in the Ukraine. Next week, we will be in the Ukraine. I think we're still bitching about Belarus a little bit in the Ukraine, but here we are in Belarus still bitching about that country. It's there's a lot of insight that that I think is brought up by recollecting things that have just happened fairly recently. So in our last minute here, Kyle, any final thoughts on that country or the trip in general?
Well, I don't know. I enjoyed myself. I don't know. I liked seeing the different bits of infrastructure and like the ways they've modernized and the ways they're still the same in architecture and just the way people get around and behave as a culture. So I just felt it was a good study of the area and eager to continue to go through my art and look at other parts of the world as well. And I don't know, I'm still processing a lot of it and trying to realize what it means and really what I saw. So this will be an interesting listen.
Yeah, you had some fantastic pictures that you took in Belarus and throughout that entire journey.
Yes.
So it's and as you've mentioned on many occasions, Belarus is really into sports and competing on the global stage, and they're looking forward to the Olympics as much as England is. They're not, however, part of the Euro 2012 competition taking place in Poland and Ukraine, which are the neighboring countries. But you get the feeling that they're following these things just as much as anybody. Okay, so we're going to move into the train journey now, the continuation of the train journey out of Belarus into Ukraine, recounting things that have just happened to us. And, Kyle, I'm sure we'll be getting your insight in the future as well. Here we go.
Обо всем интересном, что происходит в мире, расскажу вам я, Галя Корнева.
Людям о людях.
В Гамбурге появилась новая достопримечательность. Это гигантская скульптура, которая изображает купающуюся блондинку. Этот монумент пополнил серию аналогичных памятников, в последнее время активно открывающихся по всей Европе. Скульптура сделана из пенополистирола и размещена посреди озера. Блондинка, которую уже окрестили русалкой, достигает 30 метров в высоту и весит около 2 тонн. Согласно задумке скульптора, фигура должна показать, что Гамбург – город неординарных творческих людей.
Людям о людях.
И еще новость из Германии. Там недавно прошел опрос, в результате которого большинство немцев признали главной своей проблемной частью – живот. 38% респондентов рассказали, что хотели как-нибудь бы изменить эту часть тела. Ну а кроме того, почти каждая четвертая немка и 5% немцев считают, что их ягодицы и бедра нуждаются в улучшении. Ну а красотой своего лица удовлетворены почти все немцы. Лишь 4% женщин и 2% мужчин, ну, несколько беспокоятся по этому поводу. А в целом, женщины традиционно гораздо критичнее мужчин относятся к своей внешности. Ну и всего лишь 28% немецких женщин заявили, что полностью довольны своим телом. Среди респондентов мужчин таковых оказалось чуть больше, 43%.
Людям о людях.
Любите себя. С вами была Галя Корнева.
Русское информбюро. На русском радио. Света до рассвета. Горячие хиты сезона представляет казино XO.
Ни мини Купер, ни BMW и даже не Мерседес. Дорогой, я поняла, это Хаммер.
Казино XO представляет Хаммер Шоу. 28 октября тебя ждет незабываемый праздник. Яркая шоу-программа. Приходи в XO, играй по-крупному. Казино XO. Проспект Независимости, 56.
Открываются двери, тепло пришло, жаркий полдень. Я люблю все то, что вокруг меня. Я уже знала то, что все должно быть точно так. Я так ждала тебя. Мармашка в поле, в сердце моем, я не буду.
If I could speak about the Metro for a moment, it actually is one of the things that I thought worked rather well in the city, with one exception. Well, not really an exception, just kind of a big asterisk. The Metro itself is great. It's two lines. It's all the trains look the same, nice and shiny blue trains, very down to business type of things. And the system is fairly easy to navigate. What's silly about the whole thing, and it really is kind of silly, their tokens are these little plastic pink coins that you'd expect from a game of Tiddlywinks or something that a child might play. And they have a little M for Metro on them, but really it's
the cheapest looking token I've ever seen.
It really is. I mean, I've seen things in board games that are more expensive than this. Of course, you know, the Metro itself is not that expensive. I think we estimated it cost about 20 cents to ride the Metro.
Yes.
And, it's a good deal, so I guess, you know, when you have a good deal like that, you use plastic tokens. Although some people do use RFID cards.
Yeah, they have, like, modern commuter cards.
Yeah, there are some of those. We were there with our little pink plastic coins going through. And if you don't use the plastic pink coins, the gate slams really hard and makes a loud noise that everybody hears. So you better use the coin now. It's funny because when you use the little pink coin, there's always a military guy standing like right there by the gate. And I think today, on the way in, with all our bags, you actually got their attention for the first time.
Yeah, he was sort of just, he saw the big bags and felt maybe compelled that he had to at least act like he was going to check me. And I was exaggerating the whole token thing because I really want to get it right and I don't want any trouble. I want him to know that I'm paying. And I was in the midst of doing that and I was so close to dropping it in, I sort of ignored the fact that he was approaching me and starting to say things in Belarusian and, you know, wand me and I'm starting to beep. I'm like, dude, if you wand me, there's going to be so much metal that you find, it's going to be ridiculous. So, I mean, you're going to have your day cut out for you. And I am not opening all of this stuff just so you can, you know, go through all my stuff at the Metro. So, but it really was...
You were prepared to say all that to him.
I was thinking all of that.
I know, we always think these things. Okay, you know, I'm not going to let them get away with this. But what are you going to do? In the end, you don't know a word of their language. They don't know a word of your language. You're in their country. You pretty much are at their mercy.
It's true. But, again, I just... sticking to your guns and sort of holding your ground, going, moving forward. And I had already dropped the token in, and I want my 20 cents worth. So I barreled through. And it beeped and whatever, but he...
Well, dropping that pink token in was a powerful statement, I will say that.
I think that is what did it, is that, look, you can want me all you want, but I've paid and I'm entering the system now. And, of course, you know, we're traveling. We're going, we were going to have a lot of bags, and so I guess he just had to do that, go through the motions. Again, it's his job to stand there, so, okay, hey, somebody with a big bag, well, I get to use my beepy thing.
It seemed pretty half-hearted. He just sort of wandered over to you and sort of waved you, and you were on your way.
Yeah, and I think if I had been, you know, more nervous or something, it would have been.
Oh,
yeah.
Ah. So, this guy just came in, and I think he's deaf, because people who do this are always deaf. They hand you something, and you're supposed to give them money for it. And right now I have a little ceramic turtle with a piece of paper. Is that piece of paper in English in any way?
No, all not right. at all.
Well, let's take a picture of the piece of paper anyway. And, well, it's not. Sorry. You know, no, it's fine, right? But, sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, was the first sign conversation that we broadcast on the radio, and you were speaking sign, and this guy was speaking sign. Were you understanding each other at all? Were you speaking different languages, or were you speaking the same language?
I think he was motioning his belly.
I got that he was hungry. He wanted you to buy him food next door at the dining car.
Yeah, maybe he likes hamburgers from America. He was pointing out America. He was spelling America. And he was signing. He seemed interested because I was able to say thank you. I was like, no, but I don't think it was the right no. It was just like sort of across the throat, no.
You were doing all the mannerisms. It looked like you guys were talking.
I did say thank you, and I think he understood thank you, and he said no problem or, you know, it's okay. And, but I did start to try to spell out words, and I realized he's not going to understand any word because I can spell words. I can do one letter at a time, which is very inefficient, but he's not going to understand English words anyway, so, or maybe he will, I don't know. So, to sit here and sign an entire sentence would be pretty inefficient, especially if he doesn't understand English to begin with. So, but I was able to say thank you, and that's probably the only sign I really do know, and I use that with a lot of people, because it's sort of, whether language, across languages, I think thank you, just the sign for it is pretty universal. People get it.
You know, just sitting here, you know, talking about various things, and this guy comes whipping in here with his ceramic turtle and pitch for something in Cyrillic about being deaf, and a bunch of crossword puzzles and comic books and things like that apparently he wanted us to buy. It makes you realize how many weird things can happen on a train. But I'm curious, does this guy have a ticket to Kiev and he's going to keep doing this, or does he somehow just get on for one stop? And how does that work?
I have no idea.
And who else is on this train that's going to be coming in here?
I don't know. That was really bizarre. And you know what? You didn't even get a chance to take a picture of him. He came right back.
He came back so fast. He came back too fast. I wasn't able to take a picture.
You can't prove it.
Yeah. But it did happen. Well, we have the audio, so...
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, damn. No, that's not going to work either, is it?
There was a guy here.
He came in. We saw him. And I'm always going to remember that. All right. Were we talking about anything before this happened, or just basically letting the magic of the train happen?
I think you were remarking about the system... And getting through and being able to take the metro to places, you had said that these cars were much like the ones you experienced in Moscow. I've never been to Russia proper, but
I think they're the exact same subway cars. I think they just, in the Soviet Union days, they probably just handed out the subway cars to all the cities, and they just run all the time. They don't really have any personality. They don't have any announcements or anything like that, or lights or labels, or just, you know, trains. And I guess, you know, that works. And they certainly do put in the effort and get you where you're going.
The architecture in the metro stops is all very untouched, too. I mean, there's a lot of the symbols from the Soviet era, the stars, and big marbled walls and interesting glass. There was a lot of glass tile work and interesting lighting done with that, but all very like 60s and 70s, like dingy burnt orange colors and ambers and dim kind of lighting, just not particularly open and airy and uplifting. And not comical, very serious. I'd say our experiences in Montreal, where we, or in Paris, where you see these sort of older train stations, they're clean and whatnot, but they have bright orange colors and stuff. It's not the same orange. It's a much more serious look.
There's definitely a lot of dimness going on in this culture. I mean, we've been in so many buildings. We walked into, at your behest, a theater. A movie theater.
Oh my gosh, yeah, yeah.
It was just like the same thing all over again. I mean, you wanted to find out what a movie theater was like.
And you knew why. I mean, you know me. I love to go and try to see a movie when I'm in a foreign place. And I was really trying to figure out, how do I do this? I didn't quite master when the times were, and I was pretty sure the woman selling the tickets was not going to speak any English.
And of course, the woman that we thought was selling tickets wasn't selling tickets. She was just sitting in a booth.
Yeah,
for no particular reason.
It took a second trip to actually figure that part out. But the actual main part.
Yeah, it's like marble staircase. We climbed this huge marble staircase, and there's this big lobby, big empty lobby, very
wide,
very wide, very dimly lit, like everything else. Our hotel is the same way.
Huge mural with, you know, all of the Soviet kind of symbolism, the stars and sickles and, you know, people. I don't remember exactly what it was. It was so dark in there. And then we're going up the stairs and they're turning off more lights.
Mm-hmm.
And as though it's the necessary ambiance or something. It was very interesting to go in and see. And that was a lot of my impression with the architecture there and the way things are being used. Nothing's really been changed, but there's all these like silly modern things that seem so out of place. The contrast, there's a dichotomy that it's a difference between the two things. You know, on the one hand, you've got this enormous, huge, solid, you know, rock building with space and sculpture and what have you, and they're using it for a disco, or they're using it for, it's just sort of like a letdown. You're like, oh wow, jeez, oh god, they'd be upset if they knew you were doing this with the building, you know, because I imagine, you know, many, many years ago when these buildings existed, perhaps people in nice clothes and dressed to the nines to go to the cinema or to go into this, you know, large, whatever building, you know, and now it's a shoe store. It just seems weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's very weird to see them repurposed in that way. But I also can appreciate that they wouldn't want to have torn anything down or you know, gotten rid of any of this stuff because it's a deep part of their history and actually the future they're trying to create.
Well, also, it could be so much more westernized. McDonald's is the one thing that we saw, and maybe some other western chains.
Clothing or shoes.
Yeah. But for the most part, it's still very state-run.
And homegrown, the brands you'd see, or the products, the types of shops, they seem very local and very uniquely Belarusian. It's not as entrenched as other places that have been completely just, you know, overwhelmed with global and Western culture. So, and to some degree, we had to, kind of seek it out to see anything that was Western. I guess the story of McDonald's is case in point. It was also very interesting, though, and that's kind of the fun of it, is to appreciate the differences and notice any sort of the Western stuff as well. I don't know, man.
Yeah. Well, McDonald's was definitely an eye-opener for me because, I mean, we've all seen these things. We've all seen these fast food outlets everywhere, but imagine taking at least half an hour just to be able to get to the counter, and that's the way it is all the time. And there's a drive-up where it's the same thing. There's another walk-up window. It's just basically this pandemonium, and it's just really, really different than what we are expecting from things like that.
Especially since now it's sort of taboo to go to McDonald's. Everybody knows it's not quite so healthy for you, or this or that.
It's kind of like smoking. Smoking now is cool here,
absolutely,
but not at home. And McDonald's absolutely is over here. Yeah, basically, we use it up and we throw it over to other parts of the world.
Absolutely.
Not that we invented smoking, but I'm just saying, you know, we're moving on to other things.
But that was another thing. We really did try to look for the young people and sort of where the life of the city is, and I guess that's where we were staying,
We got stopped a couple of times by people. I was walking around like a fool with a tourist book, and it was the only tourist book we could find about Belarus that was in English. In fact, we found it in Berlin. Couldn't find one in the States anywhere. When you walk around like that with a book, people become very curious because they've never seen a book in English about their country. And we ran into this young woman who basically just stopped us in the street and asked us if she could look at the book.
Yeah, she was really, really sweet. Her name was Kate, and she spoke really good English and was really curious about why we were there and why we chose to come there. I think she asked us three times why we had chosen it.
People tend to ask us those questions a lot. Why you come here?
But it was really, really nice to meet a young person, and she spoke a little bit in sort of veiled ways about her experience growing up and her awareness of the rest of the world.
Yeah, you know, you don't want to bring up things that could be sensitive, like, you know, are you pro or anti-regime? You know, basically, you listen for hints, subtle clues of various sorts. And I think you got that from another guy when we were at the Patriotic War Memorial, Great Patriotic War. Oh, the deaf guy just got off the train. Okay.
Yes.
He's on the platform now.
He's leaving.
Okay. They call World War II the Great Patriotic War.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big monument there. And in fact, I read in the book that it's very interesting that there was a picture of Stalin that was sort of airbrushed out and turned into Lenin's ear, apparently. I have to look up old pictures of that to see if that's actually true. But that's the kind of thing, the revisionism that happens.
Yeah. And we were just sort of walking around this huge, edifice, big, tall.
Yeah, what do you call those things? A Washington Monument, the Ogilvy.
Obelisk.
Obelisk.
Yes. Yeah, it was a big monument. Look, there's one now.
That's right, with a big star on top of it.
Yes, yeah.
I like how people walk across the tracks waiting for the train to move. Like, they're not even waiting on the platform, they're waiting on the track impatiently for the train to get out of their way. You know, it's like.
It's that stubborn sort of, that I'm right. I don't know.
And that's another thing. When you're walking down the street, there is always somebody where you want to be. You just cannot get out of anyone's way.
The walking.
We talked about close walkers in Scandinavia, but man, they really have it perfected here, where just basically they're on your tail. And it's gotten to the point where all of a sudden I just like stop short, like I just remembered something, just so they could either run into me or just have to dive around me.
Yeah,
gets really annoying. You know, in New York, your space is your space, and you don't like people coming up behind you that way.
Yeah, they really do try to pass or just tail you and then, you know, brush right in front of you if they're going for a door at the last minute and cut you off. And
yeah.
It's like, it's really disrespectful
in the supermarket,
like, no sense of it.
In the supermarket the other day, when I was just like, I was getting a little weary of the whole thing and I wasn't feeling well, so I just like, okay, I'm just going to stand over here. No, I can't stand over there. This person wants that particular box that's right there. Oh, God, now I got to move over to this part. Now someone else is coming over there. I just ran out into the street, I think, in the end, because it's just driving me crazy.
Yeah.
No place to go.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because there's so much space. They have the widest streets I've ever seen, maybe next to North Korea.
Yeah.
And yet people are always crowded into each other and, like, tailgating, and I don't know why that's necessary when you have all this space.
My theory is they're lonely.
Well, they don't have a very good way of making friends, because shouting and scolding doesn't really endear people to them.
Not at all. But we should talk a little bit about he came up to me. I was photographing. You were sort of walking around and looking at the different aspects of this monument in the center of a turn circle, in the center of this square, I guess you would call it. And he approached me and started speaking, and I tried to... part him, I speak English. I was sort of ignoring him at first, and he was gesturing to my camera, and I didn't, before letting on that I spoke English, I was just pointing at the camera, just like, yes, you know, it's old, and kind of making nice without saying anything. And then he was persistent, and I said, you know, do you speak English? And he did actually speak a little bit of English, and wanted me to help him. He was composing a particular shot, and he had a digital camera, and he was asking me, how can I get it to focus on something that's on the other side of this glass? He was photographing a lamp, And I had no idea. I could not. I mean, why for the life of you would you want to photograph a light bulb inside a lamp? I mean, you've got this huge monument here, and you're photographing a light bulb.
It's called art, Kyle.
Yeah, I know.
That's what people do.
Fellow photographer, I appreciated it, but I was curious, because I was like, why on earth? You got to explain this to me. And I'll help. I'll try to help. So I, like, sort of brushed off some of the raindrops so that the glass was clear, and then said, you know, shoot from the top, and I try to help. So he explains to me that this light bulb, it was made by the Philips company, and the particular bulb, the fixture was Philips, the bulb itself was a GE bulb made in Hungary, and the brand or the model of bulb was Lucolux, and he wanted to photograph Lucolux, and I asked him, I was like, why? What's significant? What he was saying is that Luca implies or means Lukashenko.
Lukashenko, the leader of Belarus and the last dictator of Europe.
And Lux happens to be a derogatory word in Russian or Belarusian. So he was photographing this to show some irony or in sort of his own way, jab at the regime. And I thought, wow, that's it. And that's a glint of a little, you know, snubbing, a bit of humor. And that is a great weapon in these kinds of cultures.
And it also might have been a way to feel you out to see if you were sympathetic to that. That might have been a calling card of sorts.
A bit,
if you had taken him up on it, who knows? We could have gone to a meeting of the Revolutionary Brigade or something.
But you didn't go?
No. I stayed behind.
Oh.
Well,
I'll tell you about that later.
Please do. Yeah, that's how people meet, I guess, in parks and monuments and things like that. But, yeah, it might just have been a curious person taking pictures. Either way, I think we should bleep out his name, though.
Yeah, well, keep it turns out was an architecture student.
No, I'll bleep out his name. You can say his name now.
Oh, you mean?
No, you're just going to confuse me later when I'm editing, and there's all these blanks where his name should be. I'll bleep out the name. Don't.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not going to be silent. It's going to be a bleep.
Oh.
All right.
Well, he's an architecture student. He's studying architecture, obviously, and, you know, finishing school and whatnot. So it was very cool to talk to him, and he was asking about our travels, and I introduced him to you, and we asked him where could we go for the, you know, where there's the center of sort of livelihood, you know, liveliness and youth. Where are people that are hanging out, you know, having fun? And it ended up being right where we were staying.
Yeah, the same place we started out.
He also said we should go to the National Library, but we didn't get a chance to go, but he was particularly interested.
I bet the National Library is big concrete marble floors, large rooms, empty, dimly lit. That's just my guess.
He said it was the newest building in Belarus and that it was interesting as far as architecture goes. But I have no doubt that's exactly what it looks like.
All right.
We'll wait for a listener to prove us wrong, perhaps.
Yeah. And thanks to all those Belarusian listeners who did not write to us to show us around your town and Minsk. I guess you don't exist.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because, you know, we were able to use the internet and apparently 6 million... 4 million Belarusians are connected to the internet out of a population of 10 million. Does that sound right?
10 million sounds about right.
I believe that's what I read, is that they have a population of 10 million and that there's about 4 million people accessing the internet. And it didn't seem particularly, I don't know how you'd say, firewalled or locked down. It was fairly free. I was able to cruise around a bit and feel pretty open to it. And I read up a little bit on the National Telephone Company and you know, went to a couple of their websites and stuff. So, I don't know, it seems like we're due to have some Belarusian listeners, and we did hand out some stickers, so maybe people will get into it. And
QR code stickers, that's going to confuse the hell out of people here for a long time to come.
Well, maybe they'll get some smartphones, maybe... Maybe that's good, because that gives us time to sort of be on our way.
Yeah, we did see a few smartphones. We were at a little cafe a couple days ago, and hanging out, trying to duck the raindrops. Oh, and remember the derelict guy that was outside across the street? This is guy.
This is great.
Oh, yeah. This guy just outside, sitting on a stoop, just basically shouting at the world. I don't know what it was that happened in his life that made him just decide this was the day he was just going to go nuts and just start shouting at every passing car and every passing person.
And we were treating ourselves. This is like we wanted to go and sit down and have a good meal and enjoy the atmosphere. We found a suggestion in the book. And
a good meal is like about, what, $25-$30? So, you know, for two people, that's a lot of money.
Right.
So this was our time being outside. And it's kind of annoying to have this guy constantly shouting and stuff. And
he's like talking to pigeons.
And the pigeons were talking to him. They were coming over and hanging out. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then he became mobile after about 45 minutes or so. He just started walking across the street, closer to us. And then we saw that he had a big wad of cash in his hands.
Yes.
Just waving this cash around. And it's very strange because you saw the same thing when you were taking a picture.
An older lady, she was counting all her money. It's a very bizarre thing to see people with large amounts of bills, but what you realize...
Homeless people, basically. People sitting on stoops.
Yeah, they look like they're, you know, clocking lots of dollars and grinding on the streets. But really, what's going on is that's money they've made begging, and it really isn't much.
It's like pennies, because they don't have coins here. They only have bills, so...
Right.
If you have a 50 or something, that's not even worth anywhere near a penny.
Right.
So I imagine part of what this guy might have been shouting about is like, look at all these bills I have in my hand. They mean absolutely nothing. I think we heard some phrases like in there at various places.
I think, absolutely. And he started walking around. He was walking by and talking to people at the restaurant. He didn't approach us, but he was sort of bugging a couple people down, further down, and then...
Then he was gone, and we thought that was the end of it. And then all of a sudden, I noticed a commotion behind me. And it was one of the cafe people trying to move him away from one of the customers. He had gone all the way around the block.
Yes.
And was now back and was louder than ever. And so I think eventually they wound up calling the authorities, and the authorities came.
And we saw some serious stuff.
Yeah. This was
something. Talking like commandos, full fatigues, boots, radios, sidearms, everything.
Well, the thing is, you know, they do have cops, regular policemen. We saw them at the train station. But these guys, two guys came up to the restaurant in military fatigues.
It's not who showed up. It's not the regular, you know, two-man police car, which they have.
But then, like, this van pulls up behind them. Like, they walk up, and then the van pulls up behind them, and the van is filled with them.
Yes. Yeah, it was a Volkswagen, like, Eurovan. Like, just, you know, a minivan type thing, but they had all these guys sitting on the floor, and that pulled up, and some really mean-looking older commando types hopped out, and they were talking, and one of the guys was sort of smoothing things over with the restaurant, maybe getting their story, and then another guy approached two of the younger, you know, sort of seasoned guys were speaking with them, and then the older... meaner-looking guy was, you know, dealing with this vagrant or homeless guy, and basically didn't put up a fight. I was in a bad angle. You were able to see quite
a
bit more.
It was weird because there was absolutely no struggle at all. It's just got into the van. There was argument, attempt to get out of the situation. Just went in, and they closed the door. And they waited for the two guys to stop talking to
the
owners.
They turned the van off, didn't they?
The van was turned off. And then when that was over, after about, I don't know, 5-6 minutes, maybe a little longer, they went back to the van. And when they opened it up, I saw the guy was just lying in the corner. It was like, I don't know if he's asleep or what, but I think he just was like passed out or something.
Gave up, yeah.
Something like that. I didn't get a feeling of any violence happening against him in that period of time, and I was watching out for something like that. So they got in, they pulled away, and immediately behind them was a police car, which just appeared out of nowhere, and that was that.
Needless to say, our view of minivans in Belarus changed significantly.
Because we saw another van go by that also had some soldiers in it, and then when we were walking down the street, boy, this was kind of scary. Later on, we were just walking around town. Took us on a really long walk.
Yep.
And right next to us, this van just pulls up, and the door slides open, and I could just see the alarm in you as something like that happened.
I was terrified, and it was late at night on a Saturday. Turns out that was just sort of an inner city minibus, sort of like what we ended up taking in Albania, just like has departure and arrival, you know, wherever it's going, city to city, and they were just dropping somebody off. But God, it scared me.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to get accustomed to the different ranks and the different types of people. And, you know, there's a lot of older veterans, a lot of active older guys, and they're wearing the big hats and
a lot
full
of kids
uniforms.
Going off to service.
Yep, a lot of really young cadets. We even saw what looked like maybe a 10-year-old. I don't know if he was like interning with the trains. I don't know if he was maybe a junior conductor or with security. I don't know
he
how
had
that
a
worked.
Full get up, and it looked pretty damn serious.
Yeah, he was pretty spiffed up there, and you know, I don't know. It just takes a while, but you start to get the sense of who's on duty and who isn't, and who's doing what. But even then, you don't want to play around, because somebody who's as bored as somebody who's on duty is just as dangerous, I think, as somebody who's, you know, very seriously guarding something. So
yes.
Whenever I saw these guys in the military uniforms, I just really felt uneasy. I would just get very on edge and nervous and try to, not that I have anything to hide, but just try to not be worth the time.
Mm-hmm.
And even something I'm very critical of, I would pull out cameras and try to look very, very touristy so that I'm not any kind of threat or anything special.
Right.
I didn't want to appear interesting at all. And a lot of times it would be trying to just look up and smile and just be oblivious, appear as oblivious as possible, which is completely wrong. I mean, I'm well aware of everything around me, but I wanted to appear just sort of elated and happy to be there and
now,
distracted by the beauty of everything.
Imagine a lifetime living in a country like this and having to put on that persona and hide who you really are, hide your feelings, hide the amount that you're able to actually understand. And I think it starts changing you as a person. I think you actually wind up turning into someone a little less sharp, a little less critical.
Yeah.
And self-censorship becomes much more of a reality.
Yeah, and then you start acting like everybody else. You don't have any sense of your own self and being different or choosing right or wrong. And kind of felt like a lot of the young people were jerks. Kind of, they bought into fighting and militarism and all of this.
All the womanizing, all the smoking, all the drinking.
Oh, yeah.
It's just all the same. You know, okay, we've seen that, done that. Let's move on.
I saw bravado. I saw some guys when we were at the McDonald's, and three of them were like drinking schnapps and smoking cigarettes, and it was like, you know, midday. And the one guy's, you know, brave enough, he runs over to this girl that's in the drive-thru and like sits down in the passenger seat, closes the door, he's like in her car, and it was like a dare, you know, a bet, you know, hey, I'm gonna go hit on this girl. And then he comes back with his arms up, you know, all reporting on it, and it's so lame.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean
it's not a carjacking as it would be reported in the States probably, but it's still lame, yeah.
It's just harassment, and, you know, it's okay because that's the culture they want. Because you know what? It's going to perpetuate more of those kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that works. Those are the kind of people they want in their system.
I like to think people will change, and there'll be more diversity and more different kinds of people, not just the same macho type that we're familiar with. But, you know, the culture does a lot of work. I mean, this is the country where a recent poll indicated 42% of 42% of Americans now, 42% of Belarusians believe that gay people should be imprisoned just for being gay. That's what we're dealing with here. That's the kind of thinking that prevails. And add that into the system that they have in place here, it's pretty rock solid for the moment anyway.
Yeah, you see a glimpse of stuff, but you know that on the surface, that's as much as it is, and it probably has nothing to do with something as deep as orientation or political views or religious belief or what have you. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, okay, you've got a Metallica patch on your backpack, but that's probably about it.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a country to watch. It's a place to look at for various changes in the future.
Well,
I
absolutely.
Think they're going to happen.
I mean, those people like we met that are yearning to go elsewhere and trying and want other things for their lives, those people will find ways. And as you have said, they're going to be the ones that change things. They're going to be the leaders of tomorrow. And at some point, the regimes, the people in control have to listen, because they lose everybody if they don't change with the next generation. If they're not agile enough to appeal to that generation in a broad way, in a big sense, they lose everybody, because those people get in control. It's going to be interesting to watch. And it's inevitable, you know, things can't always be the same.
Yes. So I guess that's going to be it from Belarus for now, as we take a train towards the Ukraine. Hey, that rhymes. Taking a train to the Ukraine. And never been there before.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, that's going
to
be fun.
Can't wait to be in Ukraine. I have a little bit of family history there I want to investigate. And there's going to be a lot of infrastructure and construction going on with preparation for Euro 2012.
That's right, just like Poland.
Absolutely.
They're both having the same competition.
And just in general, as a place that has a lot of interesting history with Chernobyl and poverty and becoming a modern city and
it's interesting you should bring up Chernobyl, because Chernobyl actually affected Belarus more than it affected Ukraine.
It did.
Yeah, something like I think a tenth of the land of Belarus is still radioactive, and will be for quite some time. And their economy was devastated by all that had to be poured into this. So it's really, and we're talking 25 years ago this happened. It's incredible the toll that such a thing can take.
Yeah, cesium doesn't really go away.
Yeah. And both Belarus and Ukraine were part of the Soviet Union back when that happened. Mm-hmm. But now they're separate countries, and but they're still, obviously, nuclear accidents don't know boundaries, and it's affecting a large part of this country as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see how it affects the Ukraine in addition. It's going to be weird, though, because it's sort of like when I left North Korea going into China. I felt like China was the Western world, you know?
I feel exactly the same way. I feel like, oh, man, you know, Ukraine's going to be just full of freedom and all this stuff. And it's Ukraine, which, you know, 10 years ago, and I was a lot younger, I don't think I would have had the same impression. But I'm eager. I think it's going to be pretty darn different.
Yeah. Well, as we enter, the former prime minister is still in prison.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. There's that too. The whole political.
Yulia Tymoshenko, I believe, is her name. And
all the way back, this has the roots in the Orange Revolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
Yeah.
So we'll be going past, I think, camps of various supporters on one side of the street and the other in Kiev. And this is a raging story that's still going on, and it's going to be pretty interesting. So yeah, looking forward to that. Definitely a lot more politically active than what we're coming from right now.
And we'll probably have some more thoughts on Belarus.
I'm sure we will when we are actually on Belarus land. But until then, from the train, this is Kyle Emanuel saying until
good
next time.
Day.
Good day. Yes. Ember Radio.
You've been listening to Off the Wall in Belarus. Next week, tune in as Kyle and I continue our journey to Ukraine. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. Good night. Там, где волны звука обнимали нежно. Для тебя все очень просто, а для меня нет. Знаю, что поверила напрасно. Я не верю в тебя, прости меня. Я теперь не твоя, прости.
Hi, I'm Bob Longman with the WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, January 10th. The On Your Radar series continues at the Living Room with Roosevelt Dime, Amber Rubarth, and John Flynn. That's at 7 p.m., the Living Room in Manhattan. Your WUSB Concert Billboard for January 11th. The Little Willies featuring Lee Alexander, Jim Capilongo, Nora Jones, Richard Julian, and Dan Reeser will be at the Bell House in Brooklyn at 8 p.m. Food Will Win the War at Knitting Factory Brooklyn, 7:30 p.m. James Maddock will be at the Canal Room at 7:30 p.m. in Manhattan. Your WUSB Concert Billboard for Friday, January 13th. Ramsey Lewis at B.B. King's in Manhattan, 7:30 and 10 p.m. Joe Rock and the All-Stars will be at Chow Baby in Massapequa at 9 p.m. The Bobcats will be at the Blue Parrot in Massapequa at 8 p.m. The WUSB Concert Billboard for Saturday, January 14th. The Holmes Brothers will be at the Bolton Center at 8 p.m. Mark Cohn will be at the Fairfield Theater in Stage 1 in Fairfield, Connecticut, 7 and 10 p.m. The Mighty Sparrows will be at B.B. King's in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Wax Phantom, Bastard Cut, Unwelcome Guests, Burning Bridges, White Whale, Button Up, and more will be at the Isetawket VFW Hall at 8 p.m. Ahmad Ali will be at the Lafayette Grill and Bar at 2 p.m. And the Meadowgrass Bluegrass Band will be at Jake's Tavern in East Meadow at 8:30 p.m. Your concert billboard for Sunday, January 15th, Mark Cohn will be at the Bolton Center in Bayshore at 7 p.m. And Cheryl Wheeler will be at the Fairfield Theater, Stage 1, Fairfield, Connecticut, at 7:30 p.m. And that's your WUSB Concert Billboard for this week.
My friends, Finn with you. Finn's Revolution till 9 p.m. right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Stay tuned for some really great giveaways and some always cool music right here on the Revolution. Revolution starts right now. We'll be right back.
sneeze. Can you shut your eyes? Can you tell it's still alive? Would you pay that price? Well, that's nice.
Time for a long time. against risk.